the Midday 180. We are queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone with Paul Koharski and Chad Withrow. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Rhett Bryan making the show happen for us.
So I was at the owners' meetings for the first time in my career last year in Arizona. And there's a huge, like, banquet. Banquet's too strong. But you walk around, you have cocktails and beers, shrimp, and a lot of fancy cocktails. The NFL puts on a really nice affair. Amy Adams Strunk takes all the Titans people out that night. And so, for me, I hook up with maybe Matt Maiocco and walk around and see who I see and who I meet. And so, I finally found Matt LaFleur to hang out with. And who was Matt LaFleur hanging out with? The then brand new coach of the Cincinnati Bengals,
okay.
Zach Taylor. And so, I got to hang out with Zach Taylor a little bit. And then I thought, coming into the combine, well, maybe he remembers sharing a Bud Light that night. So, I took a flyer and called his PR department and asked, and for some reason you said yes.
And here he is.
Yeah, appreciate y'all having me on.
Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Cincinnati
this is
Bengals,
an annual tradition.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yes.
Well, also known as a 2-year-old, Coach Mack had to babysit him when he was 2 years old. Now, I don't remember anything prior to the age of like 5 years old. So you're not going to remember this, but you've heard a lot about it, I'm sure.
I've heard a lot about it. My dad coached at Kansas State. He was a secondary coach. I think Coach Mack is probably the defense coordinator back then. So, yeah, I hear the stories. I don't remember them.
They're still telling what you did.
Every time I get a little old at these events, he usually brings that up.
Do you get tired of people asking your age?
Or talking about it?
No, it's just part of the deal. You know, I'm fortunate to have this opportunity and feel like we've put together a great staff and we've got a good team going forward, and so it's just part of the deal.
Well, as I sit here, you and I are the same age, and I'm thinking, I can't imagine being an NFL head coach, but the way you've been brought up, I'm sure you feel like you've been doing this forever.
I think as a quarterback, you're an extension of the coaching staff throughout your entire career, and so it really gets you ready. That's why you see a lot of former quarterbacks get into coaching, because they feel like they've been coaching. You know, you've been helping the other positions, and you got to be a leader of the team. And so I think it's just a more natural process to get into coaching and then eventually being a head coach.
It's such a big, broad organizational thing, mm-hmm. And you obviously saw it as a quarterback and then as an assistant under a guy that had great success organizing it very quickly, and Sean McVay. What still was maybe, looking back, the most, I don't want to say surprising, but like the cumbersome or more time-consuming than you anticipated as you pieced that whole operation together, or maybe hardest to delegate?
I think you're right. Surprising is not the right word, because you anticipate there's going to be adversity, there's going to be things that come across your desk on a daily basis you got to deal with. I think it's just the volume of when they come and they come in clusters sometimes.
Yeah.
You just feel like, man, I can't get any work done because I got to deal with this personnel issues or issues with whatever it is. And that's why you got to hire a great staff that you believe in. We got Duke Tobin, who has a great personnel staff. We trust them. And then we hired great coordinators, great position coaches that I know you can empower and can get the work done when you're not around.
You mentioned Duke Tobin. I'm working on a piece. I'm curious about this very much. The Titans have all young scouts now with no old hats like that. And I wonder if, how valuable a guy like that is to you, who's been around for so long, who did the road scouting for so long, who's been a GM previously. What kind of resource is he to you?
Tremendous. You know, he's been doing it a long time. His dad was a GM. His dad's around quite a bit, Bill Tobin. So he certainly has a process he believes in that served the Bengals really well. So he's been a huge asset for me just over the last year and going into this scouting process.
Zach Taylor with us, head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals, who holds the number one overall pick. What's the approach like coming to a combine where you have pick number one?
Well, you get a chance to find out everything you want to find about those top guys that are worthy of that pick. And at some point, we'll feel comfortable with one of them to where that's the call. And it's a little different than last year. We had the 11th pick, and you're crossing your fingers on draft night. You know, God, we want Jonah. I hope no one takes him. He's there. We got him. This year, you know, hey, if we want to select at number one, we just got to find the right guy over this 4-month process, and once we make that decision, we can move forward on it.
Where do you start? When obviously you're starting draft and you have first pick, but when you start with a prospect, what is the building blocks for what you're looking at and just getting that whole process, which I know is a lengthy one, started?
So our scouts are evaluating these guys all season. They do the on-campus visits. They go watch the games. They break down the tape. The coaching staff, that really starts in January, or for some staffs, February, if they're in the playoffs. You haven't watched a lick of college tape until your season's over. So for us coaching the Senior Bowl, we started in January watching every game of guys that we felt like were worthy of the top pick in the draft. We want to make sure we went into the Senior Bowl with a great grasp of what these guys accomplished their last year in college. And so that's the starting point for us, is let's look at their last year, how do we feel our evaluation is on those guys, and then we'll start interviewing them as we can.
How important is hand size for a quarterback?
I think it's overblown. I've been around a lot of really good quarterbacks that have been deemed to have small hands. They've had great NFL careers and haven't had any issues with it.
You remember what yours are?
9.
Is that right? There you go.
Zach Taylor, our guest head coach of the Bengals. Prior to all of the Rams coaching background, you worked with Ryan Tannehill.
Yes.
In Miami. And as part of your bio, you're credited with the development of Ryan Tannehill with the Miami Dolphins. I'm guessing you were not surprised to see him flourish the way he did when he had the starting opportunity this year?
I was with Ryan for 8 years, 4 years at Texas A&M. So I've seen every snap he ever played his first 8 years of college and pro football. I probably watched those clips a lot more than he has at this point. You know, as a young coach, you really feel like you got a good understanding of him. Nothing is surprising. The guy's a great talent, great person. To see him get the opportunity to lead a new team, you know, I'm used to watching him in Miami, but to see him lead the Titans, they're built the right way. He was able to really do some great things for them down the stretch and, you know, put him in a position to almost chance, but not surprised at all by what he's been able to accomplish this last season.
What were the meetings like at A&M with Coach Sherman when you made the decision as a staff to try him at quarterback from wide receiver?
So it was really the other way around. He was always a quarterback. That we had Stephen McGee, who got drafted, I think, in the 3rd round by the Dallas Cowboys, was our starter. Gerard Johnson was behind him, who played in the NFL for a little bit. We had the third string quarterback, who was a redshirt freshman named Ryan Tannehill, who was a good quarterback, but he was third string. So the day before our first game, I think Sherman put him out at receiver and, hey, just go run this route real quick. And he had a great diving catch in the back corner of the end zone. All right, we'll take a couple more reps. And then all of a sudden, he becomes our leading receiver over the course of that season. Never practiced receiver, never went to receiver meetings. He was always a quarterback.
Never went to the meetings.
He didn't go to the meetings. He was in the quarterback meetings. So he saw what he was supposed to do. And he might take a couple reps at practice if he needed a feel for how to run a route. But for the most part, he was taking backup quarterback reps. He was in all the quarterback meetings. So you know, everyone always thinks, so he moved from receiver to quarterback. He was a high school quarterback. He was signed as a college quarterback. He's just such a talented player. He could have been drafted as a receiver. There's no doubt in my mind. He would have been a mid-round draft pick as a receiver. And so he brings that intangible to the team and can really help those receivers well because he understands kind of what they're going through and how to help them with their route running. And he's just a great player.
Is it really just as simple as if you have the athleticism as a quarterback, you already have the inherent knowledge of how to run a route and what a quarterback's looking for, that you could go out there and not go into positional meetings as a receiver and do it? Is it that simple? You just have to have that inherent athleticism?
He's one of the smarter guys I've ever been around. I mean, I think the guy was pre-med and college. His brain works a little bit different than everybody else's. So he was able to maybe not get all those reps and have a good understanding just from watching the tape. I can't speak to every quarterback, every athletic quarterback. I've seen some that didn't pan out at other positions where I'm very confident if Ryan had chosen to go the route of playing receiver, he could have done in this league.
Do you have I'm curious about your view on analytics, and particularly from the numbers standpoint. Are there things that you look at that you find more telling than some standard numbers? Now we're hearing like intended air yards is a very telling stat, or average depth of target. Is there anything like that you look at that you find telling?
I think you got to take it. It's a supplement to how we evaluate our game plan over the course of the week and information we get about our opponent and kind of the conditions we're going to play in and some things that can help you. So we certainly use it as best we can. There's some things that I'm probably not as comfortable talking about that people utilize and a little bit of it.
But you have one or two that you look at after the week and say, that.
Sure. We got a guy that works in our analytics department and meets with the coaching staff, and he's in the press box on game day, and we utilize him. He does a great job and is a great resource for us. And so there's certainly a balance of using it where it makes sense for you. You know, I think sometimes people run with one area of it and make that the end-all be-all, and that's not necessarily always the case, but it's certainly a great way to supplement how you approach a game.
Zach Taylor's the head coach of the Cincinnati Bengals. Reading up on a story whenever you got the job, there was a story out in L.A., and I'm sure you've told this a million times, of the morning coffee meeting that you would have. You would meet with, I don't know how you got involved in this group, a former Northwest Airlines pilot,
a
ex-Navy SEAL, and some hot rod enthusiast. And there was like a group of 8 to 12 people, and you would always, not always, but you would be a part of this group, and you just kept going back to this coffee group. How did you end up with this group in L.A. prior to driving in each morning?
I got to start my day with a coffee. And when I lived in Newberry Park, is where I lived in California, there was a Starbucks right on my way from my house, about 100 yards from my house, to the highway I was about to pop on. And so I'd go in there, and there'd be this group of men that would be sitting there. It's a very low-key town. You know, not a lot going. It's a great town to grow, to live in. These men would kind of always start talking to me and ask me what I did, and I just enjoyed talking to them. It seemed like they were there every morning for 20-something years, and they kind of made me a part of the group. And I didn't usually sit down and talk with them. They would spend, I don't know how long there, maybe an hour, give or take. But I would usually stop by on my way out the store and have a five-minute conversation if I could. And just great guys. It's kind of good when you move into a new community. That's one way to kind of get a feel for the community and meet some people. And
that's a small-town type story in a big city, though. Right,
but that's not a big city. You know, you think L.A. Rams, right. And Newberry Park's not a big city. You know, and so it's probably why we lived there.
You have one in Cincinnati,
Oklahoma.
Probably not quite as welcome in the first year.
Yeah, it's a little busier. It's a little busier. The one I go to is a little bit busier spot. It's not as slow. And I used to do it in Western Florida. There was a good group there in Western Florida, but now I try to get in and get out.
That's a cool story. We really appreciate you taking the time to come sit down with us. Hope you get some of the guys on your roster that you're looking at here this week. We know one of them.
You're getting one of them.
Zach, thank you, man.
Look forward to watching.
Appreciate y'all having me.